Welcome to the Back Asswords podcast. We are the Back Asswords boys. I'm Kyle. I use he, they pronouns. And joining me from our beautiful Colorado studio is Arden.
And I use he, him pronouns.
Tonight, guys, gals, and NB pals, I am going to be telling you about the CAS 2, also known as the Ghost Yacht. Now, this episode is going to be a little bit interesting. So I made this outline about a year and a half ago for our aquatic themed month that we were doing right before we took our big break. And so I don't remember really anything from this outline. And I had the thought last night before recording today. I was like, maybe I should review the outline a little bit. But then I thought, you know, we never get the chance for both me and Arden to go into a subject completely blind.
It's true.
So I thought it would be fun to try that this week.
Yeah. So Kyle is still going to be presenting the outline today, very much like how we switch off on the topics and stuff like that. But this is going to be an experiment. I'm really excited. I think it's going to be fun.
Me too.
And you're right. Like, we never get to do stuff like this on the show. And so I think it'll be kind of fun.
I think so too. And even though I made this outline a year and a half ago, we still were citing our sources. So I still do have all of our sources. And the first stop on the research train was our good friend, Wikipedia.
Because a year and a half ago, and to this very day, we still stand Wikipedia on this motherfucking podcast.
Throw them a few bucks. I'm sure they could use it.
Yeah.
Little shout out to the old format.
Yeah.
So I used their article on the CAS 2. I also used an article from strangeoutdoors.com and their historical strangeness page titled John and Peter Tunstead CAS 2 Mystery. I also used an article from TheGuardian.com titled Australian Coroner Ends Mystery of Ghost Ship, and I used a page titled The CAS 2 Mystery from TheParanormalGuide.com. And I also used a page from the Australian Missing Persons Register.com.
I'm so excited. This is going to be so fun. Good sources, too, from what it sounds like.
I mean, it sounds like they were good ones.
Kyle doesn't fucking remember. I can tell you that right now.
Nope. And I don't remember my sources, which means that we are not scholars, and we are probably going to say some things wrong.
Like, maybe this episode will just be a bomb. You know what I mean? Like, who knows?
we'll see. And we are also not linguists, and we are probably going to say some things wrong.
Like, saying that this episode is going to be bad. Come on. It's going to be good. It's going to be great. Come on. This is going to be so fire.
Now, hold on to your asses, because things are about to get backwards for all of us today.
And cover your eyes, because that's essentially what Kyle and I are doing going into this completely blind. So you might as well just walk into the cave with us completely blind.
It's kind of like a time capsule of an outline, you know?
Yeah. Hey, we're going to be starting something called our time capsule series. No, I'm joking.
And even though this is a time capsule, there are no Freemason symbols on this one. So
not like a DIA, which you have to go to the Patreon to listen to.
Oh, join our Patreon.
By the way, the episode is already a disaster. I'm so excited. Let's get into it.
A white catamaran was found drifting 88 nautical miles or 101 land miles off of the northeastern coast of Australia on April 20th, 2007.
420 BP.
Like the famous...
Wow. I have to be serious.
Like the famous story of the Mary Celeste, the crew of the CAS 2 had mysteriously vanished without a trace, starting an enduring mystery known as the Ghost Ship of Australia. Search and rescue called the state of the boat eerie upon entering it. An inquest into the incident blamed misadventure and bad luck by the crew, but what really happened is a question that will never fully be answered, as 17 years on, the crew's bodies remain missing in the Coral Sea.
Wow, so they're still missing. We haven't found anything.
Yeah.
Wow.
The CAS II's crew consisted of Captain Derek Des Charles Batten, age 56, James Alfred Tunstead, age 69, and Peter John Tunstead, age 63. All three men were retired and lived in Perth, Western Australia. They set sail from the Airlie Beach in Queensland, Australia on Sunday, April 15th, and were heading for Townsville on their way to Perth. It was an 8-week-long voyage.
Wow.
Townsville is around 165 miles to the north of Airlie, and the Great Barrier Reef lies off of its coast. They had previously left Chute Harbor just to the east and ended up at Airlie because they had a GPS issue. Batten had bought the CAS II in 2006 for around $80,000 and had sailed it a couple of times since then after taking a sailing teaching course. Prior to the latest voyage, he had taken a coastal navigation, radio course, and a first aid course. The Tunsteads were not nautical novices either, since they had sailed together from the time that they were 18 years old and even worked on the radio rooms of the Volunteer Sea Rescue. But they were inexperienced on larger vessels, which the CAS II was not.
Right. So all three of these guys have experience. This isn't their first rodeo, so to speak. You know, all familiar with this.
Yeah, I do think it is worth noting that all three men were a bit older, though. And sailing is more of a young man's game, for sure. Yeah. It's a very physical activity. Not that any of these men couldn't handle it, but it's worth it.
Yeah, it's in there. It's a component.
One of them was almost 70 years old. Like, yeah. The last known contact of the family members with any of the crew was made 1.5 hours after it left port when one crew member was contacted by his wife. Jeremy Douglas, the boat's previous owner, had warned the men not to leave the Whitsunday area because they didn't seem to have enough experience with sailing. He said that the men appeared nervous about the trip but anxious to get underway since their original start date had been postponed because of bad weather and the fact that they had trouble understanding the vessel's GPS system. He said, quote,
"If you're not ready, don't go."
The first indication that there was a problem came on Wednesday, April 18th of 2007, when a helicopter spotted the CAS II adrift in the vicinity of the Great Barrier Reef. 2 days later, on April 20th, maritime authorities caught up with the boat and boarded it. Strangely, no one was on the vessel.
Oh.
John Hall of Queensland's Emergency Management Office said, quote,
"What they found was a bit strange in that everything was normal. There was just no sight of the crew."
So what are you thinking, Arden?
How I'm feeling about this right now is, first and foremost, I'm actually really, really sad. It's very, very tragic to me that all three of these men went missing. Mm-hmm. I think them being older is a component as to why I'm sad, because like, kind of just seems like it was a bunch of guys being like, "All right, mate, let's sail the coast." You know,
and yeah, it was a leisure trip for sure. They were just having fun.
And so I feel really, really sad about that. It's such a strange circumstance, though, because they're literally looking at the boat and they're like, there's nothing wrong with the boat. Like, there's no sign of a struggle. There's at least not so far.
There was a couple of weird things that we're going to get into right now.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay. But upon initial sight, they were like, "What the hell? Looks fine." Yeah. Where are they?
So the Queensland's Emergency Management Office revealed that the boat was in serviceable condition and was laid out as if the crew was still on board. Food and cutlery were set out on the table for a meal. A laptop computer was set up and turned on. And the engine was still running. Officials also confirmed that the boat's emergency systems, including its radio and GPS, were still fully functional, and it still had its full complement of life jackets. There was also a small boat still hoisted on the stern of the ship, and the anchor was up.
So presumably when they left, all of this stuff was still running and going and blah, 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 blah.
Correct. The only signs that were out of the ordinary, other than the disappearance of the crew, was that the main sail had been shredded to bits, like fully shredded, and there was no life raft on board. It is unknown whether there was ever one on board. Presumably, the small boat would have functioned as a life raft.
Right. Huh.
The thing that really strikes me about that is that the engine was still running. It
right.
hadn't been long enough for the boat to run out of gas.
Right. Right, right, right. Mm-hmm. And also, like, if there was a different lifeboat on the boat, why is the boat moving when you're doing the lifeboat? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's
like the ship's not sinking. All of the radio and GPS and everything works fine. There was no reason to abandon ship.
The laptop is open and on.
Mm-hmm.
That sail being torn to shreds is kind of giving me the heebie-jeebies, if I'm being honest with you.
It's a little bit weird.
That's scary.
You're not the only one that got the heebie-jeebies either. Rescue officer Corey Benson said that he found an eerie scene when he was winched down from a helicopter to search the stricken vessel. He saw the discarded coffee cup and newspapers and found knives strewn across the floor. He said, quote,
"My biggest fear was being attacked by somebody who did not want me on the boat. I was 160 kilometers out to sea with no backup. I didn't know if someone was going to burst through a cupboard and go at me with a knife. I saw all the knives on the ground, but no blood, and thought, what the?"
Search and rescue efforts began on April 18th with boats and a Navy aircraft with infrared capability looking in the vicinity of the locations identified in the video and data from the GPS system. At the same time, Bowen Voluntary Marine Rescue launched a coastal and island search.
Okay.
The next day, on the 19th, a full-scale search and rescue effort was launched involving voluntary rescue units from several towns, as well as the Townsville's Coast Guard, 2 rescue helicopters, 9 airplanes, and 2 commercial vessels that pitched in to help.
Damn, they were looking.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Paul Luckin, a survival time expert, was consulted, and he concluded that it was unlikely that the men were still alive if they were still in the water, as they had probably gone overboard 3 to 4 days earlier.
Damn.
The teams still had hope that the men could have reached land and continued searching until 4 p.m. on April 21st, when the air and sea search was called off. Another coastline search was launched on Monday, April 23rd, after some new information had come in, but the search proved fruitless and was called off on the 25th of April. On Friday, April 20th, the CAS-2 was towed into Townsville Port for forensic examination, and on the next day, Sergeant Bardell and Sergeant Molloy of the Queensland Police searched the ship for signs of foul play. No evidence for this was found, and they discovered that the cabin was neat and tidy, apart from some magazines, a piece of newspaper, and a wine cask that were lying on the floor. In the sink were a few butter knives, and on the bench in the galley, a plastic sheath of fishing knives was found. Under Des Batten's bed, in a sealed container, The investigators found a firearm and some ammunition, none of which had been used. In a drawer, they found an additional single bullet of the same caliber as the handgun. The investigators also recovered a video recording filmed by James Tunstead on the 15th of April at 10:05 a.m., shortly before the men disappeared.
What?
And it showed that Des Batten was at the helm of the vessel with the vessel under sail. The sails were open and not shredded.
Right.
The sea was choppy, and none of the men are wearing life jackets. Remember, the boat had all of the life jackets accounted for.
Right.
Peter Tunstead was sitting on the aft stairway of the boat fishing, and a long white rope can be seen trailing behind the boat. All three men are accounted for in the video. The film showed the coastline in the area, and this helped the investigators pinpoint the exact location of the ship. It was in the area between Gumbrel Island, Grassy Island, and Armit Island. Between August 4th and 7th, 2008, an inquest into the men's disappearance began in the Townsville Coroner's Court, led by Queensland State Coroner Michael Barnes. In total, 27 witnesses were called to testify, and 107 pieces of evidence were submitted.
Damn.
Jennifer Batten testified that her husband, Des, was an experienced and careful yachtsman and had been around boats for 25 years. Oh, God, I just scrolled away. Oh. There we go. And he was acutely aware of the need for safety on the boat. He had earned his recreational skipper's license and a qualification in marine radio. And every summer, they traveled together to Rottnest Island on various motorboats, although the CAS II was their first sailboat.
Okay.
After they bought it, the couple took a six-week-long sailing course and then sailed the CAS II around the Whitsundays twice. Apart from a minor problem with the propeller, these trips went without issue. So he knew how to operate the boat.
It sounds like it, honestly. And he's been, and again, he's been doing this type of stuff for a really long time, for a large part of his life.
Yeah, the three men had over 100 years of experience together.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Batten's wife also stated that their original plan was to sail the CAS II to Fremantle as a couple, but that Batten was worried that just two people aboard might not be safe. He decided to take his neighbors, brothers Peter and James Tunstead, with him instead. The trip was planned over the course of several months, and they discussed the plans daily as they plotted routes with the help of a computer. Jennifer Batten said, quote,
"They allowed themselves 6 to 8 weeks to get back to Fremantle, but because Des and Peter were retired, it didn't really matter how long they took. They didn't want to sail at night for safety reasons."
Additionally, they had planned to stay reasonably close to the shore.
Right.
How are you feeling, Arden?
I'm really sad. I feel like they died. I feel like they kind of fell over.
You think that's what it is? It's a man overboard situation? It
kind of feels like a man overboard situation right now, which is really sad.
Yeah. Gavin Howland, the skipper of a commercial fishing vessel called the Jillian, testified that on the 16th of April 2007, while fishing on a reef off of Bowen, he and his crew saw a white yacht with a torn sail drifting sideways between the reefs through a narrow passage at around 5.6 kilometers per hour in a northeastern direction along with the current of the ocean. They came within 50 meters of the boat, but they were unable to spot anyone on board. This was 2 days before the Coast Guard spotted the CAS II adrift off the coast of Townsville, and the day after the authorities believed that the men went missing. Howland found it odd that a sailboat was in an area noted for its shallow water and rocky base. He didn't attempt to contact the boat or the authorities. Howland told the inquest that it didn't occur to him that the crew of the yacht might be in distress and went on to say, quote,
"It did seem a bit strange to me, but I just have this rule that no one goes near another vessel." Which, I mean,
sure, but when one has like a torn up sail like that, I might
at least
shout over, see if everything's Gucci, you know?
Like, what are you doing?
Sergeant Paul Malloy, one of the three forensic police officers that examined the CAS-2 after she was towed back to shore in April of 2007, told the inquest that he did not believe the men had been met with foul play. He spent several hours combing the ship for signs of a struggle, but found no evidence that anyone besides the three-man crew of the vessel had been on board. He said, quote,
"We came to the conclusion the boat itself was not a crime scene." So what, like just the Atlantic Ocean is or something? Like what?
Basically, yeah. Just that a crime wasn't committed is basically what
on the boat.
There, I think, yeah. On the boat, at least.
That's their conclusion at this point.
After questions by Peter Tunstead's widow, Frances, as to why the police did not check for fingerprints on the boat, Sergeant Malloy said in his years of experience told him that it was not necessary. He said, quote,
"We were there for a long time. We pulled the boat apart and found nothing untoward. If there was any indication of foul play, we would have taken every measure we could to examine that boat." Okay, I'm sorry, but all three of them are missing.
Yeah.
Look.
And you didn't want to just dust for fingerprints? Like, just check?
That's ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that you could be so fucking flippant about it. Just like, oh, well, I didn't think it was necessary to check. Like, oh, well, I'm sorry. You didn't think it was necessary to check.
Yeah, sorry, boss is cracking down on overtime, you know? Like,
what a fuck you to these people. Like, it's his wife.
To the widow, especially, yeah.
Yeah. She's like, why didn't you check for fingerprints? And he's like, I didn't think it was necessary. Your husband was just missing. It wasn't that big of a deal.
I was only investigating a crime. Come on.
Oh, I didn't like how that felt.
Mm-hmm. Despite that, the state coroner Barnes admitted in his official report that he cannot be so definitive about the circumstances under which the deaths occurred.
And the reason for that is because he didn't actually look enough.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't go all the way. He did like a half-assed fucking investigation. And that's why this coroner is like, well, yeah, he can't say because he didn't look hard enough.
So, Arden, we've been talking about the official timeline of events a lot on the podcast lately.
Right.
Do you want to hear the official timeline of events that was come up before with the original police report?
Yeah. Yeah. Hit me with it.
And this is based off of eyewitness accounts, the video that was found on board, and the general state of the yacht when it was found.
Right. Okay.
They purport that on Sunday, the 15th of April at 10:05 a.m., the CAS-2 was sailing in the vicinity of George Point. Up to that moment, everything was going as planned, but in the following hour, their situation changed dramatically. The men hauled in the white rope that was trailing behind the boat and bundled it up on the foredeck, probably to dry, next to the locker that it was normally kept in. For unknown reasons, James Tunstead then took off his t-shirt and glasses and placed them on the back seat. The report says that since the men's fishing lure was found entangled in the ship's port side rudder, an obvious explanation would be that one of them tried to free the lure and fell overboard while doing so. Standing on what is known as the boat's sugar scoop platform, which is a platform at the back of the ship right above the waterline, while the boat is moving is perilous, And falling in the water is very easy, but getting back on board is almost impossible because the boat is moving away from you.
Okay.
One of the other men then came to the rescue of his brother while Batten, who was still on board, started the motor and realized that he had to drop the sails before he could go back for his friends. As he left the helm to drop the sails, a deviation of the ship's course or wind direction could have easily caused the jib, which is the bottom bar of the sail, to swing the boom across the deck, knocking Batten overboard. This could have even happened before Batten was able to untie and throw out the life ring to his friends. And the blue coffee mug found near the life ring may support this conclusion. Since the boat was traveling before the wind and at a speed of 28 kilometers per hour, it would have been out of reach of the men within seconds. The report states, from that point, their end would have been swift. None of them were good swimmers, the seas were choppy, and the men would have quickly become exhausted and sunk beneath the waves. This report ruled out foul play and staged disappearances.
I guess I'm just kind of having a hard time with the my man reaches over for the lure, because that doesn't really make sense to me. In the sense of, like, why would he be doing that while the boat is moving?
See, I could understand the reaching for the lure. The thing I don't get is the second person jumping in without any tie to the boat to save the person that fell in, right?
Because, yeah, if person one fell out of the boat and person two just hops in, that doesn't make very much sense. Because,
no, that,
like,
just is now two people overboard. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's an acting without thinking type of thing, maybe.
Yeah, maybe kind of like that gut reaction. Like, yeah, I gotta help my buddy.
Yeah. Catching the knife while it's falling, you know?
My brother, yeah, is in the water or whatever. I also just considered the idea of a double murder suicide.
We're going to get there.
I considered that, but figured I'd mention it.
However, this report has been contested by some, and there are other purported explanations for the disappearance of the crew. Let's go over a few of them.
I was really interested to hear that this had eyewitnesses.
Well, just like people who saw the boat, you know, like the people on the ship, that fishing ship, people on the coast who may have seen it drifting, things like that.
Right.
According to the authorities in Townsville, the weather had been windy and the sea had been rough between the time that the CAS-2 departed and the time that it was found drifting. This led some authorities to speculate that the crew may have experienced some form of sudden difficulty during rough weather and gone overboard.
All right.
However, the biggest issue with this is the contents of the cabin and the fact that, including a table, they did not seem to have been disrupted in any way. The table was still set for a meal.
Right.
Relatives of the missing men say that the boat's conditions make this an unlikely and point to the discrepancies, such as the fact that the men's fishing lines and laundry were set out and that their life jackets were still stowed away, which indicated that they were not experiencing rough weather at the time of their disappearance.
And again, like, these guys have been around it for a while. Like, if the seas are going to get choppy, and they also know how old they are, they're going to put on their life jackets.
Mm-hmm. Now, we said earlier that the boat wasn't the crime scene, right? What if the crime scene was somewhere else?
What if the crime scene was another boat?
Because also something to note is the fact that the CAS-2 was found with its fenders out, which are those little buoy-looking things that hang off the side of a boat, right?
Yeah.
They're there to bounce you off of things instead of the delicate side of the boat hitting things, right?
Right.
And this led to speculation that the boat may have been docked with another as-yet-unknown vessel to to which the crew might have willingly or unwillingly been transferred.
Oh, God.
Hope Heming, niece of the boat owner Des Batten, said, quote,
"The Fenders were out on their yacht, and the only reason you ever put them out is when another boat comes aside or if you come to rest against a wharf." Okay, so they were out, which means which means that one of those two things happened.
That's crazy. The Townsville police contend that small boats very commonly leave their fenders out at all times, making it kind of impossible to draw any definitive conclusion from that one piece of evidence.
Yeah, I don't know if you can necessarily pin it all on just that circumstantial evidence.
I wouldn't bother with pulling that shit up and putting it away. Just have to get it out again when I park it. You know, it's, I see it kind of like making your bed. You know, it's like, why?
It's like, why?
I'm just getting back in like 12 hours. Making your bed
is like, why? Yeah, okay. I see. I understand what you're getting at, Kyle. Make your bed.
No, he's never. Mom tried for 10 years. It's she gave up the fight. It's not happening.
You do it for yourself.
Volunteer radio operator Ivan Orms recorded that the CAS-2 radioed in at 6:45 p.m. on April 15th, giving its position as George Point. This is the last known contact with the CAS-2. It should have taken them a very short time to reach George Point, and it is unclear what took them so long to arrive there. And one explanation is that they were just fishing the whole day. But another explanation is that they had problems with their GPS, since they already tried to set off on the 14th of April, but were forced to return because of a non-functional GPS system. That incident was because of a user error, though, and it was easily fixed, and so the CAS-2 was able to set off early the next day. And again, the GPS was reported as being in completely functional order when the boat was found.
Yeah, so again, when it was found.
I don't know how much water this theory holds.
Yeah.
But some people think that the catamaran may have become stuck on a sandbar near George Point, where the boat's last radio message was made. And when the men jumped overboard to push it free, a gust of wind blew and the boat drifted away, leaving them stranded on a sandbar.
Then where are their bodies?
They would have gotten washed away, right? Because sandbars with the tide will be visible and not visible, right? So in theory, they're stuck on the sandbar, the tide goes up, and then they get washed away into the ocean.
And then they're done, yeah.
Yeah. Some people even try to blame a freak wave, saying that someone was washed over by a freak wave. But again, I just don't buy that because... why the shredded sail? If a freak wave washed someone overboard, wouldn't that mess up the fucking galley a little bit, knock some things off the table, right? It wasn't a freak wave.
And you know? I think that the sail being shredded is such an interesting, mm-hmm. eerie component to this. Like, and it's why not really did that
explained
happen?
By any of the theories, you know?
Not even the official timeline, really.
Yeah. Well, one theory that even explains the shredded sail is that some kind of paranormal event happened on board of the catamaran, like it being attacked by a whale or a giant squid.
Mm.
And some people even think that the crew of the CAS-2 was abducted by aliens.
Professor Kyle has their tinfoil hat on still, even though we just concluded our 3/4-part series on the flying disc craze. I mean, I guess the extraterrestrial angle would explain perhaps the malfunctioning of the GPS equipment.
Beyond that,
the
feeling of high strangeness when the crew first gets on board.
Right. And also the fact that everything else is undisturbed.
Mm-hmm.
Shit is left running.
They weren't abducted.
No, I don't think so. But Just had to take you down that road.
Yeah, I had to mention it.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm not going to mention aliens when they pop up in an outline.
Come on.
What podcast are you listening to?
Come on.
The Kaz 2 is a mystery that endures to this day, and for me at least, it feels like unless they really did fake their deaths and one of them decides to pop up, like our friend from Missing 411, we are never going to know the answers. And that, ye landlubbers, was the Kaz 2, the ghost yacht of Australia.
Wow.
And once again, I do want to give a really big shout out to strangeoutdoors.com. Their article had a bunch of amazing research in it that I didn't find anywhere else. So go ahead and check out that article if you found this interesting at all.
Very, very nice. And can I just say, Kyle, year and a half ago, Kyle, can I say, phenomenal work on this outline, my friend.
Thank you. I'll tell him that you said that.
I appreciate that. Thank you. No, I mean, this is a crazy story. I am not familiar with this story at all. This is such a strange circumstance. This is so weird. It really is,
because why is the sail shredded? If they all fell overboard, why is the sail shredded?
That's the part that gets me so bad. I don't understand and the like, sail.
You can see it in the pictures there, right? That we were looking at. It is, it's not like there was a hole torn in it. It is torn to bits.
Yeah. You're telling me a gust of wind, a powerful wave did that?
But not the other sail right across from it? Like,
no.
Again, get I'm no sailing expert, but I just don't see how that happens.
No. I guess let me also just say again, like, this is really, really sad. Like, I feel really bad for these guys. I feel really bad for their families. To kind of lead into my backassard stance a little bit, mm-hmm. I do think that these guys fell overboard.
I think so too.
And that is so scary and so sad, and that bums me out really bad. I do not think that the official timeline has a really good explanation as to why they went overboard.
No.
Again, the sail, it doesn't account for that either.
Mm-mm.
But I do think that this is they fell overboard type of situation. But again, I don't know what would have made that sail tear in half or get shredded to bits, because if something that powerful tore the sail,
it would knock the coffee cup.
Yeah.
That's and the fucking laundry that's out to dry off of the boat, you know?
Maybe that jib really did turn around or whatever, and like the sail impacted with another part of the boat because it swung the wrong way or something.
Or maybe it like hit him and knocked him up over and through the sail or something.
Yeah, something like that. That is a toughie. Because mm-hmm. It almost makes you want to be like, it was the Kraken. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Which it wasn't. But no. Like, what the hell? What happened to that sail? This is one of the greatest mysteries I think we've ever talked about on the show, is what the hell happened mm-hmm. to the Kaz 2 sail.
It is baffling to me. And like the official report, I guess we just have to assume that the sail got shredded after these men fell overboard.
I guess.
In those 2 days there?
Because the boat was hauling ass when they fell overboard, according to the official story.
But again, if something happened that was powerful enough to shred that sail, why is everything on the deck still just chilling? How is there a coffee mug still chilling next to the life preserver? Like,
and I get, well, but this is also, but think about this, Kyle. I'm wondering your thoughts on this, because you probably know a little bit more about this than I do, since you are a fucking Boy Scout, you lucky bastard. But if the sail has to get torn after the men leave, right? Because the only way that boat doesn't crash in, doesn't get completely decimated is if it follows the current from for however long the men are off the boat, right?
I mean, it is a sailboat, but it does have that onboard motor attached to it that would let it move a bit.
Right.
It's not at like full speed, you know.
But like, there's nobody sailing that. There's nobody controlling that. So how did the boat not get its shit pushed in? Because they were sailing pretty close to the coastline, is what I'm saying, right? It
correct.
It could have crashed into something, but it didn't.
It didn't.
So I think that means that the sail has to be torn either at the moment that they leave the boat or before they leave the boat or immediately after they leave the boat. Because there's no way that boat makes it all the way down there unscathed with right. that sail and going.
If the sail was shredded like that and the men were on the boat, they would be immediately going somewhere to get that repaired. They wouldn't be continuing to sail on. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in theory.
Right. And I guess it is entirely possible that another boat came up to them and like, I mean, horrifying shit happens all the time, folks.
Piracy is still a very real thing. Yeah.
Piracy is still a thing. And I mean, even, you know, another couple of lunatics on a boat who are like, hey, we're super nice people. We're super safe. Come on over to our boat. And then they're serial killers or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
Like that can also happen. And so I guess I can't rule out that possibility. Again, it feels like an overboard situation, but with the overboard situation, I can't explain the sail. I don't know what's going on with that. I'm really stumped.
Yeah.
I'm confused. I'm frustrated.
Yeah. I wish I had answers for you, man. I really do.
We're never going to find out what happened to the Kaz 2 sail?
Nope.
No. No.
I think it was aliens.
No. No. You don't mean that. You don't mean that.
I don't mean that.
Come on.
But I do. I think I'm with you. It's a man overboard situation. I really, with maybe a close second being some kind of kidnapping. But like, if they were kidnapped, these are three men in their late 60s to mid 50s, right?
Uh-huh.
That is not the target for a kidnapping unless they're being used for extortion, right?
Right.
To get some kind of ransom out of people. And there was never any contact with these families to get a ransom.
That is true.
And they left this $80,000 boat just drifting.
Yeah, and they like cut a hole in the sail or something.
Rather than, I don't know, taking it, repainting it, and selling it, you know? Like
something.
I don't know. It seems like the math doesn't math on that, you know?
And additionally, like if there was any sort of a struggle, like there was a gun on board that was not fired.
Like, yeah, it was still in its case.
Mm-hmm.
Like stowed away in its case.
I don't know. I guess that's my back-assward stance is I don't know what happened to the sail, but I do think that these three men just fell overboard and it's really fucking sad. I hate that shit. That's horrifying.
Yeah. I think we're two for two on that one. That sail is going to keep me up at night.
This will haunt me forever. Yes.
But I think you're right. It's very sad, but these three men, I don't think it was due to a lack of experience, you know, or unfamiliarness with this boat. I think it was just a crazy, really sad accident, you know?
Yeah, that's what I assume it was too.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the podcast, everybody, especially as we dip our toe back into true crime a little bit.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, I guess you could classify JFK as true crime, but...
Right.
That's it's, conspiracy.
It's a conspiracy. It really does mean a lot that we get to do this show and that we get to do episodes like this and you folks are along for the ride. We just finished a multi-part series on aliens and now we're talking about people going missing on ships. It's fun. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. And we are coming back It'll be after this one, right? That we're coming back with.
Yes.
Cedar. I'm not going to say anything, but this next case that we are going to start covering next week, guys, we've been talking about as like one of the, oh, I can't wait to cover this since we started the show. I am so excited, and you guys should be too.
And I am
Arden is very nervous.
Arden is very nervous, and that should tell you something.
Oh, it's going to be so good. You guys are going to love it.
Yeah, you'll have to be here next week, I guess.
You can subscribe and review if you're enjoying the show. And if you think someone else will enjoy the show, please, please, please go ahead and share it with them.
Because word of mouth is the best way to spread that the Backasswards podcast dipped their toe back into true crime a little bit, and that Arden is nervous for the episode next week. And you know that I am very nervous, and that the Backasswards podcast is your favorite podcast.
You can listen to our previous episodes for more. I'm going to recommend the episode that was supposed to come directly before this episode, which would be the Fiji Mermaid and Jake the Alligator Man.
Wow. I have never thought in my life that I would be bringing up Hugh Jackman as P.T. Barnum in an episode of the Backasswards podcast, but that happened on that episode of that podcast. It's a great episode. You should definitely listen to it.
You can follow me and Arden on Twitter. I am at BackassWordKyle. Arden is at Arden_Smith. And you can follow the podcast on all of your favorite social medias on Twitter at BackassWordPod, Instagram, BackassWordsPod, TikTok, BackassWordsPod, and on Facebook, search the Backasswords Podcast. You can also join us over on Patreon. I know it's probably starting to get a little bit annoying, but guess what? We'll stop doing it when you sign up. When all of you sign up, we will stop doing it. So, to help us shut the fuck up, go ahead and subscribe to our Patreon, especially at the $5 tier. So on top of getting us to shut the fuck up and stop plugging Patreon, you also get access to a bonus episode every single week. And guess what? We don't shut the fuck up over there. Shut the fuck up over there either. It's the Wednesday Phenomena. The Wednesday Phenomena!
The Wednesday Phenomena!
And you will love it if you love what we cover on this show. You also get access to our Discord. You get a shout out on the main channel. It's so much fun. Help us out.
What a fucking Patreon ad. Thank you for that, Kyle. The Wednesday Phenomena. It's very fun. Come on over.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Arden.
And we will see you next week, unless you're sailing with your buddies off of the coast of fucking Australia, mate. And you see something up in the sky. And what is that up in the sky? It's a fucking UAP. That's right. And guess what? It's coming closer. And is that a tractor beam coming off the UAP? Oh, no. Oh, no. It's got the sail.
And when
you can stay safe.
And when you're getting abducted by the aliens on your ship off of the coast of Australia, just remember that the ship that came up to you, that's next to your ship currently, is full of men in black who are reaching out their hands to see if they can help you, but they can't, so that you can stay weird.
They weren't abducted by aliens. They were abducted by MIBs on a boat.
Ooh, the danger is real, my friends. The danger is real, my friends. The MIBs could be anywhere.
Oh, my God.
Stay safe.
Stay safe, guys. We'll see you next week.
Weird.